Prebiotics and probiotics. We've heard a lot about them in the news, on the radio, and this program. We actually talked about it several months back. But there's still a lot of question about it. Is it a food fad? Is it a bacterial therapy? Dr. Robert Martindale is a professor of surgery and the medical director for hospital nutrition services at Oregon Health and Sciences University. We're really pleased to have him with us today. In fact, he's going to be giving a lecture on prebiotics and probiotics free and open to the public tomorrow, and we'll give you the details about that as we move along today. He'll be talking at the VA Hospital Auditorium in Madison. So really happy to have him with us today. I know you may have some questions about prebiotics and probiotics, and I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us as well, and the email address is talk@wpr.org. So you can join us that way as well. And Dr. Robert Martindale, thank you for coming. Appreciate it very much.
Well, thank you for having me.
Let's talk first about what they are. I mean, we could probably spend many hours talking about this, but what are prebiotics and probiotics, and how do they differ?
Well, prebiotics are basically the substrate for the bacteria, so what the bacteria need to grow and produce in the colon, usually mm-hmm. in the colon is what we're talking about. So that's really not a bacteria itself. It's just something the bacteria can utilize for energy and for nutrient production and things in the colon, and so they'll go on to. Now, probiotics are actually the live bacteria, which are given for various disease states and various issues in the both healthy as well as the sick patient, which have been shown to have some benefit. Again, we have mm-hmm. to be careful.
Right.
As with all of these so-called nutraceuticals, there's pros and cons to all of them.
And when they are incorporated into foods, what potential health benefits are there?
Well, with the prebiotics, the benefits are things such as production of what we call short-chain fatty acids. When the insoluble fibers, the guars and gums and things that come in foods or as mm-hmm. supplements, are metabolized by the bacteria that normally, or what we call anaerobic bacteria, the species, things like Bifidobacterium or Lactobacillus. People have probably heard of Lactobacillus.
Sure.
When you take those different bacteria, will use the soluble fibers and metabolize those to produce what we call short-chain fatty acids. Those then can be taken up by the body through the colon wall, through specific transporters. We now know that we've learned a lot about these in the last few years. Taken up, and they affect white blood cell function. They affect blood flow development. They affect the motility in the colon. So there's a lot. Virtually every cell in the body can be affected.
Wow. So there could be some real benefits there.
Oh, clearly.
Well, I tell you what, Joanne in Hawthorne, Illinois, Hawthorne Woods, Illinois, has a question for you. So let's go to Joanne. Joanne, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yes, thank you so much. I had a quick question. I'd like to know what oral foods that we can take by mouth that have prebiotics, because I have a 22-year-old daughter that just recently had a feeding tube put in, secondary to progressive neurological disease, and a product that she takes quite wonderfully called Jevity. It's a Ross Laboratory product, and it was the first time that I ever saw that it contained something called prebiotics, which it says help maintain, restore gut flora damaged by, you know, antibiotics or disease. And so I thought, well, gee, what are prebiotics? Mm-hmm. And so how wonderful that you are on the show to explain.
Yeah, thank you for that question. Yeah, the prebiotics, in that case, I believe it has FOS, which is fructooligosaccharides, and several other. These are sugar compounds, which are very large, which don't get taken up by the first part of the intestine, but they make it to the colon undigested, where the bacteria that then can metabolize them. Well, if you look at the foods to contain these, the classic things which they develop and get them for these products are to put them in the products, then comes something like artichokes and various plant products. Almost always these are plant origin, and really any fresh fruits and vegetables have some prebiotics in them. It's a matter of, you know, which ones. There's various amounts. You can go online and actually just type into Google prebiotics, and you can get lists of things. Some foods are higher than others. But generally speaking, fresh fruits and vegetables have prebiotics in them.
Oh, thank you.
And we can use the prebiotics actually now if you selectively pick a different one like fructooligosaccharides or mannooligosaccharides, different ones. You can actually generate or change the bacteria flora in your colon. If you use the right combination and you want to, for example, increase the bifidobacterium, which are big butyrate producers and lactate producers, big butyrate producers mainly, which seems to be one of the active ingredients, if you use a certain type, you can increase that. If you use a different type, you can increase the lactobacillus. So you can actually change the colon flora based on what type of prebiotic you take.
Wow.
And, wonderful.
Yeah, that's interesting. And why would you want to change the what's the benefit of going one way or another way?
Another great question. We know that the body now lives in a communal relationship with the bacteria living in our colon. If we look at the total number of cells in the human body, that makes up about 10 to the 13th cells or billions of cells. Well, actually, there's 10 to the 14th bacteria living in our colon. So they outnumber us by at least 10 to 1, maybe 100 to 1. And so I think that we used to think the colon bacteria are just there. We didn't really do much. We now know that we live very closely in relation. And in fact, if you're stressed, for example, someone undergoes a surgery or a car accident or something like that, within 30 minutes, the bacteria living in your colon begin to change. And they say, you know, something's going on here. We better change. And they actually will change the surface proteins on their cell walls to allow them to attach and become aggressive in the colon. So that's, I think, the issue today is we have so many basically insults to our intestine, whether it be even a single dose of antibiotics we now know changes the bacterial flora within hours. We know that it changes the pH of the colon. All of those things make a difference. The risk of growing invasive bacteria changes with a single dose of broad-spectrum antibiotics. So I think we're seeing that overuse of antibiotics, stresses to our daily activity, changes in our diet, not eating and fasting, all these things will change the colonic environment and thereby change the overall outcome.
Hmm. Well, Joanne, I thank you very much. And good luck with your daughter, by the way.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you for being on the program, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Steve in Campbellsport, will give you a chance now. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I have a bad back, so I take a lot of Vicodin, say, and anti-inflammatories and some muscle relaxers. What role does that play in... Mm-hmm. in the biotic field?
Again, a very interesting question. As we know that any of the narcotic medications as well as the muscle relaxant medications can also slow the motility of the colon. Changing the motility of the colon, we know, changes the bacteria. We have an increased number of anaerobic bacteria like Bacteroides, for example. And we've shown that by enhancing, using some of the specific probiotics, one that's commercially available, I don't like to say names, but it's on the market today. You can buy it. It says, you know, it enhances regularity, so to speak. There's actually been very good data made by the Danon company that shows that we can, in fact, enhance regularity. So, in fact, if you're having trouble with bowel motility because of these narcotics and muscle relaxants, those kind of things can help. We actually know that probiotics, these live bacteria, can increase the motility of your colon.
Interesting.
Okay. I had polyps removed, say, mm-hmm. 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Does that help with avoiding polyps?
Well, that's a good question. Also, there is some data, although the data here is a little bit gray, because there's been a study on the use of prebiotics in the development of polyps, and that has not really shown a significant difference. But again, there's some problems with the way it was studied, which we don't really have time to get into. But now the probiotic data is very good. There's very nice data, you know, I mean, with the idea that polyps will eventually lead to cancer. We know that most polyps are precancerous lesions that take about 5 to 15 years to develop into a cancer. The data here is very good in that butyrate, which is what's produced by these bacteria when they take up the prebiotics and metabolize them, the butyrate serves as basically a chemical inhibitor, which is part of the inhibitor in the production of polyps. It's a very nice deacylase, demethylase inhibitor. So it's a very nice data to show. Again, the science is very well worked out here. In fact, some of the chemotherapeutic agents work similar to the butyrate.
Interesting. Steve, thank you.
All right, thank you.
I appreciate the call very much. Talking prebiotics and probiotics with our guest today, Dr. Robert Martindale, who is professor of surgery and the medical director for Hospital Nutrition Services at Oregon Health and Sciences University. Really happy to have him with us today because we've had lots of questions about prebiotics and probiotics. I hope you'll join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. Probiotics, let's just to go back to them for a minute, have they been recognized by scientists for a long time, as an important thing?
Well, interesting you asked that. I know these are all good questions. Well, where they really got their start was back in 1906 with a gentleman named Eli Metchnikoff, who actually won the Nobel Prize in 1906. Well, he published some interesting papers while working at the Pasteur Institute in Paris, where he showed that groups of populations that lived long periods, like, for example, at that time it was called Bulgaria. In area Bulgaria, people had an average lifespan of 80 years old, when the rest of the world at the time had an average lifespan of about 50 in Western societies. So he studied what was the difference. What was it that gave these populations the ability to live a longer life? And it was a healthy life. It wasn't lying in a bed. It was a healthy working life. So he went around and studied really throughout the world, but really focused on those two that were easy to get to, the Western European and the U.S. population, as well as the Bulgarian population, and showed the only thing in common amongst all of the groups that lived a long time was their consumption of fermented milk products or fermented food products, not necessarily, because there's some groups in Korea that have kimchi, which is a fermented cabbage product, obviously. But the fermented milk products, and he actually named Lactobacillus bulgaricus after these people in Bulgaria, and showed that these people that ate a lot of fermented milk products, whether they smoked or drank or whatever, really didn't matter. It was whether they had a lot of big production of this fermented milk products. And then there's been multiple companies. The Nestle company has been certainly one of the forerunners in this area, where they've actually looked at aging populations and shown that there is a slight decrease in the total body inflammatory response when they eat daily consumption of a lactobacillus product.
That's and when you say fermented milk product, you're talking about
yogurts. Yes, basically yogurts. There's other products like kefirs, which are liquid, more liquid, but basically live bacteria of the lactobacillus bifidobacterium species that produce lactic acid bacteria or butyrate or propionate, these small acids which activate the body's response.
Well, we have many people who'd like to visit with you, and we'll get to them in just a couple of minutes. Dr. Robert Martindale, our guest professor of surgery and the medical director for Hospital Nutrition Services at Oregon Health and Sciences University. Our guest here today as we talk prebiotics and probiotics on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy to have you along on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Dr. Robert Martindale, professor of surgery and medical director for Hospital Nutrition Services at Oregon Health and Sciences University. Really happy to have him along today. He's an expert in prebiotics and probiotics. We'll be speaking at a free public forum tomorrow, September 19th, tomorrow at noon in the VA Hospitals Auditorium in Madison, sponsored by the Department of Nutritional Sciences and the Institute on Aging at the UW-Madison. So if you want to hear him or see him in person, by all means, you can make it to the VA Hospital Auditorium tomorrow at noon. I certainly would encourage you to do that. In the meantime, we're going to take your questions. Margaret in Appleton's up next, but you can call us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Margaret, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a question about specifically what probiotics to take. When I go to a discount store or even a pharmacy, and I look at the various things that are available, they have all kinds of interesting names. Some of Lactobacillus is one of the things that you see most often, but there's a question about how much to take. There's obviously different dosages, different preparations. Is there something that people who are dealing, as I am at this point, with the after effects of many weeks of antibiotics should look for? Is there something that someone who is just looking to promote health in general should look for beyond, just the lactobacillus?
Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, that's another great question. I think you're exactly right. There's a lot of confusion out there and what's available, what's not available. Buying them in a health food store, you don't know what the expiration date are. Remember, these are live bacteria, so in many cases they're dead before you ever eat them if you get the ones that are out of date or whatever. So I think, they're not regulated per se by the FDA now because they're part of a medical foods issue in most cases. So people, and they're generally recognized as safe by the FDA. So they don't have a regulation. Probably we should have more regulation. Now, the two questions specifically I had is how much do we need? Well, a tough question, but generally speaking, about 300 million bacteria to a billion bacteria once or twice a day. Medically, for replacing after antibiotics, is usually what we like to see. That's pretty easy to do if you're eating a yogurt of live culture yogurt. And most of those, all those contain, of course, Lactobacillus acidophilus. Now, the keys are the ones that contain more of the probiotics. Some companies have probiotics added because they all undergo pasteurization. They have things put back in them. And what they put back in them is after the pasteurization process is what really makes the difference. I can tell you the names, again, which is very hard to remember, I'm sure, but the names of the ones that become active are things like Lactobacillus rhamnosus, Lactobacillus gigi, Lactobacillus plantarum. Again, big names, fancy names, but those are the ones that seem to be viable. For example, Lactobacillus plantarum, which is in many commercial yogurts, not many, but some commercial yogurts, that if you take a billion Lactobacillus plantarum, 7 days later, you can still culture that out of your colon. Now, remember, the definition for a probiotic is something that's normally found in your intestine. Okay, so these are not something that's, some pharmaceutical. This is actually things that are in your intestine when soon after you're born, they were there, but very small amounts. And what happens when we take antibiotics, like you mentioned, we destroy the normal flora. And we basically remove the competition to allow the things that might not be as friendly, more pathogenic things to overgrow. So by putting back in these probiotics, which lower the pH in the colon, we then get back to what we call normal flora. In many countries, I do quite a bit of mission work, and in many countries, we see when they give an antibiotic for different diarrheal diseases, it comes with a probiotic. In this country, we've sort of not really taken that. We've sort of taken a more scientific approach and waited for some data. And I think the data now is there. There's scientific data. But again, it's hard for you to remember, like some of the brands just have Lactobacillus acidophilus. Now, just Lactobacillus acidophilus rarely makes it out of the stomach if you have normal acid in your stomach. It's very good for prevention of the bacteria that causes ulcers. Like, Helicobacter pylori, it actually is very good in that case to prevent that. But it doesn't do much for our colon. So we have to get bacteria that are more viable and healthy, like the plantarum, the rhamnosus, the GG, the brewerii. Those bacteria seem to be pretty consistently.
Are those, as you look at, say you go to the store and you're looking at yogurts, and it's practically impossible to remember those names, certainly for me, and they're already flying out of my brain. Is there something on the labels of these?
The labels will say contains live cultures, and most of the time it will tell you what bacteria is in there.
Okay.
And I think that's the key. Again, the ones that are just pasteurized, like in other words, they take the milk product, they make the yogurt, they pasteurize the milk and then make the yogurt. That in itself, to make the yogurt process, they have to put in a couple of bacteria. But those mainly are for function of the fermentation, not so much for the function in the body afterwards. So, I don't want to say that the organic yogurts or the more smaller yogurts, but in many cases that's the case. For example, in Northwest, we have a local yogurt producer called Nancy's Yogurt. I think it's actually available here in Wisconsin also, where they put back in the probiotics, as many do. They're not the only ones. Many do put back in the actual probiotics, the Lactobacillus rhamnosus, the plantarum, after the process, which then gives them their function.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
When you see these kinds of things in pill form, my mother is 93, and she takes a probiotics pill form that is produced somewhere, I think, out of the country, and it has a list of probably 8 or 9 different really long names. I don't have the box in front of me, so I can't remember what they are. But she takes these things. They're very expensive, and she's taking these things because she thinks, you know, that this is going to, I mean, she's 93, so obviously something has helped.
Work.
But I guess the question is, when you see these things in pill form, if they're not, you know, in a culture like yogurt, do they do the same thing, or is how does that work?
They can if they're viable. That's a great question. Although I have to tell you that one of the one of the big GI meetings last year, our big national GI meeting, two or three of the people actually went to the health food store, bought a whole bunch of these products, and went back to the lab and looked at them and said, do they really have what they say? And there was only about a 15% correlation. So you've got to be very careful about spending a lot of money on pill form. Now, there are good ones. Don't get me wrong. There's some very good ones out there. But you almost have to kind of be an informed buyer and look at them and find some system to look at it. And it's very tough. I would say if it's got an expiration date, that's the first thing and benefit for it, because then they're going to kind of guarantee. There's also some companies that will quantify how many bacteria, and that's what the big push in the FDA now is. Before they can put a label on there saying they've got these bacteria, they should be required to actually show they've got them in there. There's no regulation for that now, but should be. The good news about taking the yogurts is that you know they're live if they say on the container live, because that actually was required for the food serve issue. And so then, you know, and they're easy to take. Personally, I wouldn't waste a lot of money on capsules for probiotics if they're very expensive. You know, you can get it just as easy through a good, healthy yogurt, which has got multiple bacteria in it.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Paul in Milwaukee, it's your turn now. Hi, Paul.
Yes. Hi. Thank you. I'm a 42-year-old male, and I have been on a regimen of daily doxycycline and antibiotic due to a hair and skin condition. And this is very intriguing to me, as I didn't realize I might be altering all the things you've been talking about. What's the long-term effect? What's the bottom line that I should be real careful of?
Well, I think the infectious diarrhea is probably the first thing that comes to mind. A bacteria which is now sort of spreading in the country, it's been around for a long time but getting worse, is a bacteria called Clostridium difficile infections. If you develop lots of bacteria, lots of diarrhea, that can be a real problem. And people that take chronic antibiotics or acute antibiotics also can get that very commonly. I would say if I was you, I would probably get yourself a good healthy yogurt, go to the grocery store, and maybe even a Whole Foods type of place or some, mm-hmm. New Seasons, whatever you have around here or in there in Milwaukee. And look at those. Find one that's got multiple of these bacteria on there, and then just eat that every day. That's going to help, and you should continue it every day while you're on the antibiotic. Like for traveler's diarrhea, for example, the State Department's website even recommends now that if you go 3 days before you go, take a yogurt. Lactobacillus GG is the one that's got the most data. 3 days before you go, during your trip, and when you come back for 5 days, and that should pretty much remove the ability of remove the potential of getting traveler's diarrhea. Mm-hmm. I know that works for me, and in every country I go to now, I usually buy the local yogurts and eat those.
Hmm. All right.
Try taking a yogurt on an airplane these days. That'd be a little tricky.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yes, it would. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
And Bill in Avoca, you're up. Hi, Bill.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
Just a sec. I was wondering what the doctor had to say about chlorine or fluorine in the water. My sons live over there by Fitchburg, and you turn on their faucet when you go to their apartment, and just fills the room with that smell of chlorine. I'm used to living on an organic farm, and I drink water out of a well all the time. And when I smell that, I just wonder what it does to your body or your insides.
Well, you know, I'm not an expert in that area. I'd have to rely on the local health officials. I just don't know much about fluorination of water. I'm sorry to tell you.
Yeah, it's primarily done, of course, for as a preventive for dental disease, and has been shown to be very, very effective in cutting down cavities and so forth. So we have to save that one for another show, but thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And let's see, who's next? Laura in Kenosha County. Your turn. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I'm a 57-year-old female, and I've been recently diagnosed with gallstones, and in the effort to try and move the stones through the duct that they're stuck in, I've been trying different health food things, and I was wondering if probiotics would be helpful. I bought some yesterday, and I had about a quarter glass last night, and it didn't cause any discomfort, but they're small golf stones.
Well, interesting. Usually once you've got the stones, you're pretty stuck. There's a few things that will dissolve the stones, but they're not in the probiotic realm. There is a little bit of data that actually probiotics may prevent stones from forming, but once you have the stones, you're pretty much
you're stuck.
Yeah, you're kind of stuck, and you really can't get them out. Interesting questions. And prevention, maybe, but not once you got them. You won't be able to dissolve them with probiotics. I'm sorry.
Right. So in the future, maybe to prevent them, it would be helpful.
Yes, oh, yeah, definitely.
Yep.
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Mary in Park Falls, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a question.
Okay.
I am on a high-powered antibiotic, which I'm on for 28 days on and then 28 off, and I take it forever till I die, I guess. I'm 80. I have a genetic breathing problem. My question is, what would be a recommended dosage for me? I do notice I have more sluggish than a diarrhea.
Yeah, I would again, kind of like the similar caller a little while ago, I would find yourself something you like that's got a good profile in it, a good probiotic profile, and I would take it every day you're on those antibiotics. I recommend to all my patients, so I put on antibiotics for diverticular disease. I'm a GI surgeon, so I see quite a bit of that. Whenever I give them antibiotics, I give them either I tell them to go to the store and buy a good yogurt, and I give them several names for our local region. Or I actually will tell them if they need to buy a certain other pills. The problem is I don't know what's available to you in your local grocery store, so I can't really give you specific names. But I think if you go to the store and sort of read through them, you find one that's got a good profile. Like I mentioned, the Plantarum, Lactobacillus plantarum, Rudii, Rhamnosus, GG. Those are the ones that seem to have the most data. The data is very, very good. And just pick one of those you like to drink, and I would take it whenever you're on the antibiotics or like to eat.
And it's not necessary to do it all the time when on my off month.
No, not necessarily. But you know, you might find that you kind of like it and you do it. It certainly won't hurt you. You know?
Oh, okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Pat in Dubuque, Iowa. It's your turn now. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have acid reflux, and I also have been diagnosed with slow digestive system, and I have a terrible time eating yogurt, and I'm wondering if you know of any reason why, because I think that it should be helping me rather than making my problems worse.
Do you find that the yogurts actually make the things move through slower?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I know that my acid reflux is a lot worse when I eat yogurt, even though I'm on an acid reflux medicine.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's happening in the proximal gut there with the reflux, but I think the data for the colon, if your whole GI tract is a little bit slow, certainly the Bifidobacterium regularis, which is in this product Aptiva, that works very well for the distal small bowel. There's many studies to prove that. The proximal small bowel and the reflux is a little bit harder. There is some data to show that really any of the lactobacillus which produce a significant amount of butyrate will enhance stomach motility. And that's the whole the idea behind the Lactobacillus casei-1, which is the one that's been shown to inhibit the H. pylori, the bacteria that gets in the stomach to sometimes slow things down and increase your reflux incidence. There's been pretty good data to show that Lactobacillus casei, both in this country and in China, which is a very high incidence of Helicobacter pylori, that bacteria, that enhances that and decreases the risk of that infection. So the proximal gut, we have a little bit of data, but for the colon, we have a lot of data for Lactobacillus species helping. I'm sorry, it's not working for you for the proximal gut. You might just try some different types, you know.
So the one that you think is the best is Activia?
Well, that works for the colon. I can't tell you I have any data for the reflux, but it definitely works for the colon. There's, I think, 16 human studies now, 11 which showed positive results in a blinded fashion.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll try that.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much. And Bruce in Milwaukee, we're on to you now. Hi, Bruce.
Well, hi there. I have a sad story, and the doctor may be able to shed some light on it. My mother, for various reasons, was in and out of hospitals over the last year and contracted C. diff 4 times.
C. diff?
And, she died of it, I believe, because the last episode of it totally wasted her completely. She was constantly dehydrated and had diarrhea. She did kind of regain some bowel consistency, but never completely recovered from it. And the question my family has had is, how contagious is this? Is every surface in her bathroom, every surface in her room carry this germ? And can healthy people get it? And we did reading about and found that bleach solutions should be used to clean. But should bedding be thrown away? Should clothing be tossed out?
These are all very good questions. The Clostridium difficile, I'm sure, is what you're speaking of, the C. diff, is a problem because it's a spore former. It spores forms a spore which is resistant to the emollients we use in hospitals and things. So it requires either detergent, so that I think you don't have to throw the bedding away. You certainly can just wash it with a good detergent soap. It'll be fine. The bleach solutions are good for the surface areas in the hospitals. In fact, that's what we use as a bleach solution, and we, of course, isolate people with Clostridium difficile. Interesting you say that, because we now know there's very good studies. The best one published in Lancet in 2007 by a man named Hickson, published a study of 135 patients with antibiotic-associated diarrhea, which he showed that if he gave them probiotic, I believe he used Lactobacillus GG, but I'm not positive of that. It was one of these species I've been mentioning. Lactobacillus GG showed 0 of 57 patients were then required to develop C. diff. So I think we know that keeping the colon at a certain pH and helping produced by these probiotics will prevent the overgrowth of this bacteria. We now in my hospital commonly will give anybody on antibiotics, get them, everybody in the ICU on antibiotics gets the probiotic protocol, which we basically take a teaspoon of our yogurts, mix it with 30 cc's of water, and put it down through their feeding tubes in the ICU if they're on antibiotics.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for calling. And Anna in Evansville, on to you. Hi, Anna.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call. For the last 10 years or so, I've been making my own yogurt and my own kefir from a freeze-dried product that comes out of Canada. I want to know if you're saying that the process removes all the beneficial, viable bacteria. Am I actually doing the wrong thing?
No, not at all. If you're buying a product which is probably freeze-dried lactobacillus, which then you take a skim milk and start that as your base and add
exactly.
The bacteria. Yeah, no, that's fine. I don't know what bacteria is in there to make that base, but
they were saying lactic bacteria, L. cassis, B. longum, L. bulgaricus.
Yeah, that's very good. See, the Lactobacillus KCI1 is probably the one which is a good probiotic. Bifidobacterium longum is a pretty good probiotic. Lactobacillus, you said, which is
Bulgaricus.
That's a classic one. That was the original one described by Metchnikoff in 1906 in Bulgaria. So those are all good probiotics for daily routine maintenance. It's interesting that for some diseases, we have to look at a specific bacteria. But for day-to-day general use, those all three are fine bacteria.
And may I also add that I have used this on a pet that had diarrhea, and it works beautifully every time.
Well, interesting you say that, because, you know, the European Union banned the use of antibiotics in animal products, and because of that, they now use tremendous amounts of probiotics and actually found that their meat production is better now from their probiotics rather than giving antibiotics in the long run. That was one of the initial pushes to get these things going, was the probiotic use in animals to prevent the diarrhea they catch when they go to feedlots. Because if one catches it, of course, they all catch it. And if you're selling your meat based on the pound, if you lost 20% for dehydration from infectious diarrhea, you have a problem. So we know by giving them pre and probiotics, you can prevent that diarrhea. And that work in animals is very well worked out.
Yeah. No, I'm not harming my little dog in any way.
No.
All right. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Wonderful program.
Thank you for calling. And Bridget in Green Bay, have a quick question.
Thank you for taking my call. I am calling about my 5-year-old daughter who has been on Lactobacillus acidophilus for the last 3 years due to very bad stomach cramping. And she was on Zyrtec and all kinds of medicines and took her off of all that, and the stomach cramping didn't go away. Put her on Lactobacillus acidophilus, and she never has a stomach issue. However, I'm wondering, now listening to your program today, if that is not enough, if I should be giving her something else.
No, I think if that's what's working, I would continue with it. I don't know that I'd make any major changes. I mean, any of the yogurts, my kids personally don't like much yogurt, so it's hard to get me to get my kids to eat it. Whereas that was, you know, I've been studying nutrition now since getting my PhD in nutrition 25 or 30 years ago now. And the over, you know, 15 years of my career as a nutrition person, I never really made major. But then I started reading this probiotic literature, and no matter where I am in the world, I try to find myself some yogurt every day. So, I mean, I think, you know, some fermented milk product every day is certainly going to be helpful, I believe.
Thank you very much for calling. And Dr. Martindale, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
And I hope to see you again. You'll be speaking tomorrow. I should mention that again, September 19th, tomorrow at noon, in the VA Hospital Auditorium in Madison. It's sponsored by the Departments of Nutritional Sciences and the Institute on Aging at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And that's the topic, probiotics, prebiotics, and symbiotics, which we didn't talk about, and we don't have time to talk about now. Thanks again. I hope when you come back to Madison, you'll visit.
Thank you, Larry.
And be on the show. Dr. Robert Martindale, thanks to him. And thanks to you for listening. Garden Talk coming up tomorrow. And stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.